Welcome back once again, episode 293. We are, what, 7 weeks away? 7 weeks away from episode 300. I wish I could promise you something extra special for episode 300, but you know, and I know, it's just going to be the same old thing. But luckily, the same old thing is worth coming back and listening to, which most of you have, and I appreciate you very much. If you are new, this is your first time listening, I ask that you'll listen to the whole thing. Stick it out. We do have a Christian-specific segment that is roughly the halfway mark of the show, very roughly sometimes. Sometimes it comes way earlier, way later, but I aim for halfway. I do put it in its own spot just because if you absolutely, I don't want to hear none of that Christian stuff, then you don't have to, but you can enjoy the first part of my ramblings. It's just much the whole show. But I do encourage you to try it at least once. If you listen once and you're like, I don't really care for that, then you don't have to. I don't care. Christian-specific segment is for those who are already believers. If you're a non-believer and you listen and you come to Jesus or something, then that's great too. But that's, by doing it for those that already are. And that's what it's geared towards. And it's nothing like going to your local church. It's fun. It's a good discussion. Regardless, if you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Drop something in the plate. I really do appreciate it. I think it's great. I really do. If you want to do that, we have the ultimate privacy coin, which is snail mail. We do have the address right there on right here on the description page. Look right there on Radio Albion, right there where you skip over the part nobody reads, which is what the show's about. I always have to write that out, and I'm like, nobody's even going to read this. They're going to listen to the show or they're not. But you look right there at the bottom. We got the address there. It's not hard. Address the envelope. I appreciate it. Always excited. See who I hear from. 99% of the time, it's very familiar names and such. And I always like it because I know you're all right out there. When I see something, it's like, got something from this person. Good to know they're doing okay. I said this recently. I said, when I don't hear from a familiar name, I want to say a familiar voice, but I'm not literally hearing your voice. But when I don't hear from some of y'all for a while, I thought, I hope everything's okay. I hope they're doing all right. And always, whenever I see something, it's good to know you're still out there, still kicking, and still listening to the Parish of the Patriots. Let's jump into that listener supporter mailbag. Tony, no note there, but Tony, I did get it. I do, of course, very much appreciate it. Speaking of folks that are around every week, Mr. T, GPD, not much to say this week, just honk. And yes, it is clown world, Mr. T. It's never ending. I come across a story talking about clownishness. I came across a story this day. I may do it on the Daily Nationalist, maybe next Friday, kind of bring back the theme of a Friday Daily Nationalist like Sven would always do. Because I saw the story and I thought Sven Longshanks would have been all over that. And it was about like the Star Wars, and they've got the first transgender stormtrooper. How the hell these are all supposed to be clones? But you got one trans stormtrooper. And in the Star Wars universe, which is not our universe, but this one still has the transgender flag on their stormtrooper uniform or something. And of course, this is being praised as very brave, very brave, very groundbreaking. I was thinking about doing this. I may not. I probably won't. But I saw the story and I bookmarked it. Because I was like, man, Sven Longshanks been all over. That'd have been a Friday Daily National. She know it would have been. Bless his heart. By the way, Sven's doing fine. I've been in regular contact with him. I can't share his contact info with y'all. Not that I'm being like stingy, keeping Sven all to myself. But he's in basically a halfway house and he has a lot of restrictions and obviously who he's allowed to contact with and all of his stuff has continued to be monitored, whatever. Anyway, they don't want that shared. That's why it's not me being like a stingy asshole or something. That's part of his stuff is they don't want that information out. We're abiding by that. We're always going to make sure, I always tell Sven, if you run into something that's a gray area on your restrictions and you're not sure, I said, always fault on the side of making sure you're doing what you're supposed to or ask one of these people, is this allowed? Don't get yourself in any trouble. It may be an inconvenience, may be frustrating, but make sure you stay within the confines of your conditions. And he does. Y'all know Sven. He's He's a cool dude. Let's see here. GPD, I don't know about you, but all this clown world you see, I put much of the blame on the Zog MCC. That's from Triangle Whip. I thought of this as like, maybe instead of Zog, you got to have Zoc. Zionist Occupied Church, the Zoc. I may have to use that in the future. Zoc. You got the Zog and you got go to church on Sunday. You go to the Zoc. That way everything is approved. That's from Triangle Whip. Thank you, Whip. And we'll get into that, I think, a little bit today in the Christian-specific segment. So be sure you tune in. I know you will. Tune in. Some of that. The Zoc. I may use that. I don't know. Keep that in the floating around in the back of my head. The Zoc. It's all part of the program. You don't understand any of this clown war going on if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of it. We're going to talk in the first part of the show today. I haven't talked about it in a while. But I think I can talk about it. This is another one of those things. Six times, I put the Christian specific segment last, you know, in its own section, in the first part in its own section. You know, and I try to not be real preachy in the first part because, you know, obviously that's what we got the Christian specific. But sometimes there's a gray zone. Sometimes there's a little overlapping. There may be a little overlapping today. Because I'm going to tell you, you're never going to truly understand. You can understand everything you can think you can understand about, you know, banks, Jews, whatever. And I'm telling you, you're not going to truly understand the world you live in if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of that. And like I said, we're getting into this in the first part of the show, but you know, I'm throwing around terms like spiritual aspect of it. But he's starting to preach early, and I'm not, so bear with me here. But I am telling you, you may think you are the red pill, so as to speak. You may think you got it all figured out, but you won't truly understand what's going on, the way things go in this world, if you do not understand the spiritual aspects of these things, these motivations. You know, when you get yourself, and I've done it. Look, I have done it in the past. You know, this life is about growing, learning, understanding, and adjusting. You're not going to gain wisdom if you hold on to foolishness. When you're wrong about something, you got to let go of that and move on. When you're down, like you look at the way they talk about the media, for instance, and the government, they'll talk about Kim Jong-un. And of course, they throw these ridiculous, crazy stories about him out there. And if you question them, it's like, well, why would he do that? You know, these ridiculous, absurd, over-the-top things. And you'd be like, well, why would he do that? And when they have to respond with, well, just because he's evil like that. He just does evil stuff. He's evilly doing evilly things. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Either you're lying to me or, you know, if he is doing that, there's a reason. What is a reason? You have a motivation. And it's easy. You know, if you find yourself dismissing, well, these people do this just because that's what they do. They just do it because. There is no just because. When you have to rely on, well, these people do this just because, you're tacitly admitting that you don't actually understand the motivation. And that's fine. Look, we're all learning all the time. Like I say, I look back and I would rely on things like just because they can't help it. Just what they do. When you start really understanding the spiritual aspects of the world around you, the motivations become clear. Then you understand the driving force of clown world. These things make sense for a reason. They don't make sense. And the reason they don't make sense is because most of us fail to understand the spiritual context of things. We'll talk today, and we're gonna delve into this. We're gonna talk about pornography and prostitution. I'm probably gonna name this show the title of the show because I always have to come up with a title, and it's always hard. I'm probably gonna come up with a title something along the lines of "On Pornography and Prostitution." Like everything else on this show, y'all know. There is no script. This is just me talking. This is a conversational show. It's one of the reasons it takes a very special type of person to do a show with me, to, you know, have me sit down and do a show with them. Sven Longshanks was good at, we did so many, he just do with it. Dr. Johnson does well with it as well. It's hard. Whenever in the past, I don't really do shows with other people anymore. I don't really care to. I mean, if someone asks, I'll consider. But I don't really, I'm really not interested in doing that. It's nothing against somebody else. I don't really like care for it that much. But in times past, when I've sat down with somebody and done a show, maybe been a guest on somebody's show, whatever. Or perhaps I've had somebody here. It's always difficult for them because they expect show notes. So they go, well, what are we going to talk about? Go ahead and send me basically the script of what we're going to talk about. And I'm like, well, I'm probably going to talk about some general subjects like this. And they're like, well, that's pretty general. It's the way I fly. Y'all know that. Long-time listeners, you know, that's the way I roll. Same thing today. We're just visiting here. But I want to talk about Cloud World. I want to talk about all prostitution and pornography. Pornography is proliferant. I need more coffee. Pornography is everywhere in this society. I'm not going to sit here and we got to roll. I'm not going to sit here and keep tongue twisting myself because I haven't had enough coffee. We're flooded with various forms of pornography, and it's on a scale. Now, here's one of those things. It's a classic example. Pornography is a multi-billion dollar industry. They pay billions of dollars per year producing pornography. And one of the most curious things is you have to ask yourself who pays for that. Because I don't know why anybody would pay for pornography. A couple clicks on your computer, you can see every sort of pornography you want to see. And they're not charging you for it. It's all free. How is it you got a industry where they pay out millions of dollars a year and you can go get the access, the content for free? Well, if Hollywood spends $200 million producing a single film, they're not going to let you just walk into the theaters and watch it. They expect you to pay a ticket because they expect to turn a profit on it. And yet pornography is unique because they don't expect to turn a physical profit on it because you could go get it for free. Why is that? Doesn't make any sense. Why is it? Billions of dollars in pornography. Now, I don't think you can have a discussion about pornography. And we're going to get into the fact that pornography is on a scale. Now, there's when you say pornography, people think of, what, various sort of X-rated videos. That's, you know, what people generally think about. I guess I should have said at the outset here, but you've figured this out by now. But I'll go ahead and say it. Now, this is going to be an adult conversation, okay? We're not going to sit here and pearl clutch and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're talking about this. This isn't going to be a discussion for you to have your little kids sit in and listen to. Maybe some of y'all do, but not this time. We're gonna have a conversation about this like grown folks. We're not going to sit here and act like, oh, we're so pure that we don't know these things. I wasn't even aware that these things existed. We're going to talk like grown folks here. You've got a scale. You say pornography, people think about, you know, X-rated videos, but it goes much further than it's a sliding scale. There's a lower scale of pornography. I would say when you're driving down the billboard and you look up and there's a, or you're driving down the billboard, you're driving down the freeway and you look up and there's a billboard up there advertising a product, but the first thing your mind sees and registers is a woman dressed all sexy laid out there with her tits half hanging out, her legs showing. That is, she's clothed, but that is pornography. It gets your attention. It's designed to trigger that part of a man's brain. That is pornography. It's not on the same side of the scale as some disgusting hardcore porn video, but it's on the other side, but it's still on the same scale. You see what I'm saying? You're inundated with it. Why? There's a reason for that. Now, one of the curious things here, and this is why I say any discussion of pornography, I think you also have to discuss prostitution with it. I don't, any discussion of porn without also discussing prostitution is going to miss the mark. Here in America, at least, I know for those of you in Europe, it's a little bit different. But here in America, prostitution is very, very legal. Very illegal. They do everything they can to make sure. Now, they come up, like everything else they do, they have all sorts of excuses of why it's illegal. Usually it's we're defending these poor, innocent women. They're being human trafficked. And one of the funny things about that lie is because they do things that force them into human trafficking. Because usually when they talk about human trafficking and prostitution, what they're talking about is women have a pimp. These hookers have a pimp, and he takes a bunch of their money. They don't get to keep all of it. The pimp takes the money. Now, it's not like the pimp does nothing. If you're a hooker walking the streets, you're going to be a victim. Because you're in a rough, seedy area, and they figure, you know, a hooker's doing business in cash, obviously. Ain't no one taking no card or no checks. So she's going to have cash. The pimp is her protection. Everybody knows, you know, that sly dog, that one sly dog girl, he running. And you can't rob him because sly dog will come up there with his boys and beat the crap out of you and probably kill you and throw you in the river. So the pimp protects her, but he takes a big cut of her money. This is what they talk about. One of the things that happened years ago, we had a thing here in the U.S., and it was called Backpage. And Backpage was known for mostly prostitutes would advertise on Backpage. And I saw, I don't even remember where I saw a documentary. I'm sure it was online because I don't watch regular TV. There was a documentary online about this, and they were talking to some of these prostitutes that were working off of Backpage. And these women were saying it was a great thing because they want to deal with pimps. They're not out on the streets. And this one particular woman I remember they interviewed, she said, you know, after doing it for a while, now she just has basically like a regular list of guys that comes over, you know. Oh, I've got an appointment Thursday with Fred. Fred, you know, she's been with Fred so many times. She knows Fred ain't going to show up and wind up being some sort of weirdo. She knows Fred is an okay kind of guy. You don't have to expect something strange. And these women said it was great. They're not on the streets. They want to deal with pimps. They, you know, they can cull through. Like if some guy shows up and he's a weirdo, she can run him off and tell him don't ever, you know, come around here no more. And so on and so forth. Now, the government, the federal government came in and shut that down because they said it was human trafficking. And when that happened, these women were saying, well, now they're going to force us back out on the streets. One of their justifications for cracking down on prostitution in this country is, well, you don't want to drive down the street with your kids and there's these seedy whores out there walking around, you know, selling their bodies. You don't want to see that. Of course, you go to certain areas and that's exactly what you see, isn't it? You had something like Backpage, where women aren't out on the streets selling their wares. You're not going to go on there looking for hookers by accident. You know that there's hookers there. But yet they shut that down and push them back on the streets. And they say, we're doing this to stop human trafficking. Bear with me. We're going somewhere with this discussion. We're going to get down to the reason. Now, you have this fact that they crack down on prostitution. They do not. You know, I mean, you can go find a prostitute. But any guy who does that knows he's running a risk because it could be a sting. You know, it could be the cops. And the cops are going to loop you up, run you through the ringer. You're going to have a record now, criminal record, you know, for trying to pick up a hooker that was actually an undercover cop. This is the sort of thing police spend time on, making sure you don't have actual sex. They don't want you doing that. You can't be doing that. Any guy that goes out to find a hooker knows he's running the risk. It could be a sting. He could wind up going to jail. And to explain to his family what the hell he was doing out there. Soliciting a prostitute will be on your record from henceforth. You go apply for a job and they run a background check. Well, this guy got convicted for soliciting a prostitution. He's a creep. Paying a woman for sex is illegal in this country unless you pay her money to have sex in front of a camera that can be viewed by millions of people. That's legal. Think about that. It's one of those things that you're not going to understand unless you understand. If you, as Joe Blow, you know, go out and get caught paying a woman in exchange for, say, you say, I'll give you $200 for an hour of a good time, and you get caught, you go to jail. You get that on your record. That's illegal. If you're a porn producer and you pay some woman $10,000 to do degenerate, disgusting sex in front of a camera to be viewed by the whole world, you see, that's 100% legal. Because, you see, in this case, the woman is not being, quote unquote, victimized. This is the part where people start pulling their hair out and going, which doesn't make any sense. But it makes perfect sense if you understand the point. Now we come back to your society. Is that you are inundated with pornography. Maybe you don't look at disgusting videos, and good on you. You don't look at that stuff. But you're still going to be inundated with it. There's going to be images everywhere. Hell, you go to town and women are dressed inappropriately. When you go to town and a woman is dressed inappropriately and it triggers that part of a man's mind, that is pornography. You know, it is. It's on the lower scale, obviously. You're not watching some weird German scat porn. But it is still on the scale because it triggers that part of your mind. And the thing it has that puts it on the pornography scale is that you're not actually going to, this is not going to result in sex. Your brain registers that as sexual availability, as a signal of sexual availability. Islam recognizes this. This is why they make women cover up. But we're not going off there right now. Your brain reacts to that. They can make all the laws. They can do all the social shaming they want. It's not going to change the fact when a woman's walking around with her tits half hanging out and wearing what I refer so colorfully to as those whore pants, and your brain is going to see that, and it triggers, it's going to trigger sexual availability. Now, you overcome that with your mind and say, yeah, well, she's not. She's just flaunting it around. But anything that triggers that and says, oh, sexual availability. Now, see, she has no intention of having sex with you. She's not going to have sex with you any more than those women, if you're watching hardcore video, are having sex with you. You see, it's to keep you in some form, some state of constant sexual stimulation. I told you this is going to be an adult conversation, so bear with me on this, because we're getting to a point of why this is. You're in a constant, they keep you in this constant state of sexual stimulation. But the key to this is that you're not actually having sex. Look, if you're a gooner that constantly watches porn and masturbates, you need to get real with yourself. You're not having sex with any of those women. They're never going to have sex with you. You're not having sex. You're lying to yourself, you see. Now, this is why prostitution being illegal is a key element. They don't want you having sex. If this was just about, we're going to promote degenerate sex all over the place, you know, prostitution would be legal everywhere. You could just go get with a prostitute. But see, the fact that it's not tells you they don't want you having sex. Now, you'll hear about people that go off and do a weird thing. Like, you hear somebody, that there's a mass shooting, and this person was like, you know, a 30-year-old virgin or something. He's never been with a woman, and he just snaps and goes off the deep end. And you look at that, and you know, and this guy's one of the, you know, they call him, quote-unquote, incels. It's like an insult. Incels. The society is creating incels, and then they turn around and insult people. Oh, you're an incel. You've never even been with a woman. And you think, well, what if that guy could have just gone down instead of like stressing out because he can't get a girlfriend? Maybe he would have been okay with it if, like, once a month he could have gone and paid a couple $100 to a hooker and at least had sex and maybe moved on with his life and just been satisfied with that. But you see, they don't want you doing that. At the end of the day, and here's where we get to the why of all of this that we're talking about. It is about spiritually breaking you. It is about, let me put it this way, to make a finer point on it. It is about breaking your spirit. People look around, you hear people comment, on society and look around and say, what's wrong with men today? Why are men like this? Why do men have this attitude? Why do men this? Why do men do this? And the answer is simple. Their spirit is broken. They have broken men's spirits with this. This is the reason. This is why they spend billions of dollars a year on pornography and give it away to you for free, while also outlawing prostitution to make sure you're not actually having sex. See, it's about spiritually breaking men, because a man, when men are spiritually broken, you see, those men are easily manipulated. They just give up. You know, a spiritually broken man throws his hands in the air and he just gives up. I don't even care. You can see this all over the internet. People say, I don't care. I can't get a wife. I can't get a girlfriend. I can't have sex. Why am I working? Why am I participating? Why am I even alive? There's no point in any of this. They give up. See, that's spiritual. Anytime you read something like this, you see someone saying something like that, that is a spiritually broken man. That is the program. So I say you can't understand this stuff if you don't understand the spiritual aspect. See, the worldly view is none of that counts. None of that exists. So none of this actually makes any sense. If you understand that it's a program to break your very spirit, and it's working. Men are spiritually broken. This is just littered with spirits. This nation is just covered in the spiritual corpses of men. They're just spiritually broken, wandering around. Now, I want to be sure that nothing I'm saying here is being misinterpreted. I'm not saying you should be going out and banging hookers. I'm not saying that. What I am pointing out, though, is that this is a deliberate program to break people's spirits, and it's worked, and it continues to work. They tell you, they want you to think everybody's out there having sex, but you. They inundate you with pornography on that sliding scale that we've already talked about. And yet, if you're not, they also tell you, basically, if you're not out there having sex, then you're some kind of weirdo. You're some kind of loser. Something wrong with you. But here, you can look at some more pornography. There you go. We'll throw you that. We'll throw you all of that to you that you want. For free. Not even going to charge you. Isn't that so generous of them? We're going to wrap up on that note and get into the Christian specifics. Amen. We got to keep on rolling. I hope you'll stay with us through this, through the Christian specific segment. So, you know, do everybody say the same thing? You know, do get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. It has been said, you can judge a man by the company he keeps. And I understand the reasoning behind this, and there is a certain amount of truth to this saying. However, I believe a more accurate saying would be, you could better judge a man by the enemies he has. You remember when Jesus walked the earth, the so-called good people, they criticized him. He's sitting down and eating with publicans and sinners, while the self-proclaimed so-called good people were busy running around, wallowing in their hypocrisy, their iniquity, and their wickedness. Also worth noting, contrary to perhaps how the MCC would like to frame it, Jesus was sitting down and eating and visiting with these so-called publicans and sinners. He was not partaking in their sins. He was hearing them out. He was talking to them. He was instructing them. It was hearing where they come from and probably explaining things to them. It was not by any way, shape, or form or means participating in sinful behavior. The society you live in, the world around you, the communities you live in, are by their very nature going to be a reflection of the character of the people. If those who claim to be the quote-unquote good people, the self-righteous, the upstanding citizens, if you look around and the community and the society you live in is utter garbage, then you can rest assured that there's also something wrong with the self-professed good people. Where's their leadership? What are they doing? Jesus warned, no servant is greater than his master. What they do to me, this is what Jesus said, what they do to me, they'll also do to you. I mean, you're not going to get a pass. They hated Jesus. They also hate you as his servant, as brothers in Christ. This is to be expected. When you look around at those who oppose what is right and what is good in the world, when those very same people, when it comes down to it, when the very same people who opposed and were the enemies of Jesus Christ are also opposing you and are your enemies, this isn't something to be ashamed of by far. For as I say, I believe you can better judge a man not so much necessarily by the company he keeps, but by the enemies he has. Now in the Lord's Prayer, it is written, Lord, lead us not into temptation. I was thinking of this the other day. Lead us not into temptation. Why would God lead you into temptation? I was thinking of different forms that temptation can take. We look at the MCC, and we look at people in general, and the people in the regular, just run of the mill church, and how far and straight off people have become as a society. As I said earlier, if you live in a society that is in a downward spiral, well, where are the good people? Where are the leadership? Where are the teachers? Where are the preachers? Where are those that are supposed to lead them in the proper direction? It's easy to lose patience with the sheep. Jesus is the shepherd. He is he's the ultimate shepherd of the sheep, and he loves his sheep. However, a shepherd with a large flock, he hires hired men. You hire employees. You keep employees and the workers, the employees, the hired men, their job is to tend to the sheep while you're taking care of other sheep or taking care of other business. When we look at the state of things and the state of the MCC and how so many people are wandered off, where are the hired men? So many things I see can be traced back to a failure in church leadership, a failure among preachers, teachers, a failure among every level of what is supposed to be Christian leadership. Somebody has some sort of position of influence in the Christian community. Now, if the shepherd shows up to check on his sheep and half of them are gone, and he looks at the hired man and says, where are my sheep? And the hired man's response is, what? Lord, these sheep are stupid. They just wander off. You see, the shepherd, the master, is not going to blame the sheep because that's what they do. The master's response would be, yeah, that's why I hired you, because they will. They'll wander off. I always find these illustrations from the Bible interesting because I was raised in a more rural environment. One of the horrors, one of the awful things about urbanism is it removes you from nature, and nature is where you understand, you come closer to understanding the things of God. And being one who was raised in a more rural environment, I'm familiar with sheep and their behavior. There were people who were like masochists, gluttons for punishment, and they'd run sheep on their, and they would run sheep on their property instead of cattle. No one could ever understand why a man would want to be a sheep rancher. Why would a man want to run sheep unless he just had some sort of masochistic tendencies or just enjoyed misery? We used to joke and laugh and say a sheep is simply walking around looking for a place to lay down and die. It takes very little. They wander off. Cattle will instinctively try to defend themselves or they'll at least do things that make some sort of sense. Sheep, not so much. Now, goats, on the other hand, goats are escape artists. They're just looking for a hole in the fence. It doesn't matter if they're nowhere near a fence. You have a 100-acre place, and the goats could be in the middle of that place. And I guarantee you that goat eye, he's checking that fence. He's looking for some spot to squeeze through. A goat by its nature, oh, we're looking to get out of the fence. Sheep, on the other hand, are always looking to wander off and die somewhere. That is what they do. It's one of the things that makes them just burdensome to deal with. Now, obviously, this was written back before they really had fences. They were just free-ranging their sheep. So you had to literally have people out there walking around. Otherwise, the sheep, in their endless quest to find a place to wander off and a reason, some excuse, any excuse, to fall over and die, will do so. So they literally had to have somebody standing out there with them 24/7. You know, you read the story of Jesus' birth and the angels appeared bringing the news to the shepherds in the fields in the middle of the night because that you had to be out there all the time. You see, a sheep, it doesn't know, it don't work on a clock. A sheep is 24/7 looking for an excuse to run off somewhere, wander off somewhere, and die. This is the nature of the sheep. Now, as such, going back to what we were saying, imagine the master shows up and these hired men are like, oh, Lord, these sheep, they're constantly wandering off. Well, of course, that's why I hired you. Why do you think I'm paying you? Because they will. They'll wander off at the drop of a hat. They will wander off. And they're looking for a place to die. It's the nature of a sheep. But we are told, which is written, the good shepherd loves his sheep. He does. He loves his sheep. He'll abandon the 99 to go hunting for the one that wandered off like a moron. The one stupid sheep wandering off, as sheep tend to do. He'll go and look for them, bring them back. That's why they're hired men. And the hired men in our illustration, of course, are going to be those who have positions of responsibility in the church, a preacher, teachers, so on and so forth. Where are they at? When you see these things in the state of things, when you look at the MCC and deserving of all the mockery that you can hand out to it for the state that it is in, we always do well to remember that what we're seeing is a reflection. It's a reflection of a failure in leadership. The sheep are going to wander off. That's what they do. That's why you have to have hired men to keep them rounded up. When you see people way gone off astray, it's because there's a failure. The hired men aren't doing their job. They're busy. Now, we're going to get into that here a little further and some of the reasons why that is. And In most things I see, polls, surveys, the number of people attending Christian churches is on the decline. It's in decline, and depending on denominations, but a lot, especially your Protestant churches, it's in steep decline, And that's kind of a worldwide phenomenon. It's always interesting that the media tends to write those stories like, you know, this is a good thing. And it's funny because of a lot of the times you'll see these false teachers, these false prophets, these false preachers, and they will always be the ones quoted in these stories. You never notice that. And they say this declining membership, this declining interest among the sheep in Christianity, in the church, it's a sign that we've got to get with the times. We need to further modernize the church. We need to cast off those old beliefs. Get with the times. We need to get more modern. We need to give the people more of what they're drowning in 24/7, and then they'll attend our crappy MCC church. And of course, they continue to get the opposite result. It's also written, Jesus warned to beware of wolves dressed up as sheep. You know, those who come around and present themselves, but they're there to deceive. They're there to intentionally lead the sheep off, lead them to their deaths. That'd always be on the church leadership over the years. And this isn't a recent thing. church leadership has progressively failed for generations. You know, the failures started generations ago, and they've just mounted, and they keep doubling down. They keep doubling down further and further, and the sheep are wandering off. It's and whenever I see one of these stories, that the steep decline in church attendance in what were once majority Christian nations. And I never understand why anytime somebody voices surprise at this, the things that this world is promoting to the people are quite clear. There's no need to sit here and go over them for the umpteenth time here. You're all well familiar with it. And what do you see in most of these Protestant MCC churches? They're promoting the very exact same things. So even the sheep, when it comes down to it, they have an urge. They're driven to seek the Lord. There's something telling them. You don't just go to a church or start looking into these things for no reason on a whim. You have something that's driving you forward. There's got to be some reason for this life. There's got to be some meaning in this life. There has to be a purpose. But when they go to one of these churches, they don't find it, do they? One of the reasons that drives people to this is the insane clown world nature of the society that we live in. And yet, imagine you make the trouble, you walk into a strange place, you walk into a place you've never been, one of these churches, and what do you get? Get more of the same crap that you're drowning in, garbage, the sewage that you're drowning in on the outside. Well, of course, you're not going to keep going there. There's no reason. You can get that. You can turn on CNN. You can turn on CBS and get that. You don't need to go to church for that. You don't need to dress up. Go to church for that. It's kind of a shame. I'm always questioning myself. And what I mean by that is I'm always questioning, you know, why I do the things I do. Why I view the things. I believe that we should always be challenging ourselves. If you're not willing to challenge yourself and your beliefs and what you're looking at, the way you view things, and as such, if you find something is incorrect, if you're stubborn and you're not willing to take corrective action, in other words, if that's pertaining towards sin, another way to put that would be repentance. You've got to be willing to say, this certain individual belief that I've had maybe for your whole life is incorrect, and I've got to now change that. And that can be very difficult, but you've got to be willing to do that. You've got to be willing to change that. And when you get used to having that viewpoint, you're always questioning, well, why do I view things this way? I'm at the point I have found that I'm very, shall we say, suspicious, even at this point, dismissive of people that I see, preachers, for instance, who have wealth. I'm not talking about you've got to take a vow of poverty. I'm going to try to get back to that here in a minute, why I don't agree with that quote-unquote vow of poverty per se. But I am. When I see some guy and he has a mega church and big fancy hair, or maybe he's a TV preacher, I have a negative internal reaction to that. But because I question myself, I'm like, why is that? You know, I ask myself, are you just jealous of these people? You know, he's up there preaching about the Lord and he's got a new Mercedes in the garage. But I've come to realize, no, it's not jealousy. I don't give a crap about a new Mercedes or a fancy house. It's not that. What is it? Why is it? Because most of you probably have that same reaction, don't you? And you ask yourself the same thing. Well, this guy's up there talking about Jesus. And why do I look at this guy and I have a negative reaction? Why is it that my gut instinct says, don't listen to this guy? He's a fraud. Now, it doesn't help that some of these guys, I literally have told people this, you know, you see some of these guys, and I will tell people, I would not buy a used car from this guy. Like, if I rolled up at a used car lot, I'll use Joel Osteen because he's such an easy example. If I rolled up at A1 quality used cars, and I got out to look at this used car over here, and Joel Osteen come walking out with that big smile on his face, I'm going to get back in my car and drive off because he looks like a crook. That's just my personal opinion. I'm not trying to just talk smack about somebody for the sake of talking smack. But just my instinctual reaction to that person, that individual person, is that guy's a crook. He's just, he looks like a salesman. He just looks like a crooked salesman to me. But I thought all this further, because you got to go beyond just, you know, because, you know, sometimes you just see people, you just, for whatever reason, you don't think, you just don't like that person or whatever. You just have a negative reaction. And sometimes that's not always based in reality. You got to be fair. Again, I'm always questioning myself. I always want to challenge myself to make sure that I'm not coming at something like, well, I'm just a little bit jealous. That guy's preaching and he's doing really good. And you live in poverty. You know, I mean, maybe you're just jealous. But as I've questioned and I look at it and I realize, Lord, lead us not into temptation, and what that is about, and the warning. And this is the part where I start maybe attempting to tie everything we've been talking about here together. I was talking to somebody recently, and they were telling me they were watching a TV preacher. Some people do that, apparently. And they were amazed. They were telling me, man, I said, man, I can't believe they let this guy stay on TV. And this interested me. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, man, he says, I've seen several of these TV preachers. And they're up there talking about the government. And they're saying, man, the government's, we got to do something about this government. It's in bad shape. We got to vote for some different people. We got to get these guys out of here. This country's in trouble. The government's doing this crazy stuff. So I can't believe they are allowing them to do that. And I didn't say it. I don't know. Sometimes you just something tells you it's just not a point. But I thought to myself, if but yet they're still on the air, aren't they? Which tells you they're allowed to. In other words, it seems like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're saying that. But the fact that they're not taken off the air tells you something. That's within the confines of acceptable, you know, acceptable discussion. I thought to myself, I didn't say it, because some people just, you know, they're not going to be able to receive it. And you have to read the room, so as to speak. But I thought to myself, yeah, if that same preacher stood up there and said, we've got to cut off support for Israel. If that same preacher said, yeah, I mean, it seems to me like the Jewish lobby has a whole lot of overrepresentation as far as influence over this government. I can 100% guarantee you he would be off. They probably cut it off mid-feed. Cut it off mid-feed. By that night, he would be embroiled in some sort of scandal, shamed, and run out of town on a rail and lose everything he has. This is why it's included Lord's Prayer that Jesus gave us. Lord, lead us not into temptation. You see, like any other form of ticket taking, whether it's a celebrity singer, actor, politician, it's all the same thing. These people are purchased at a price. And it's a temptation. Imagine you're a struggling musician or you're a struggling actor. And someone all of a sudden shows up and basically offers you a deal with the devil. You can be a celebrity. Now, these are the conditions. Deals with the devil are a tricky thing. They're not like on TV. Satan himself isn't going to show up and say, here's where you sign here. You understand you're going to hell. It's not quite that tricky. Or rather, I should say, it's not that quite that up front. It's more subtle. You imagine you're a preacher and you're doing okay. You got your little church and you got a steady congregation and you know, you're pretty well liked and you get up there every Sunday. You're doing all right. I mean, you're not living a lavish lifestyle by any stretch of the mean, but you have a church and you go to it and you preach and the congregation puts a little bit of money in the plate and you're able to ease out a living. And you're rolling along with this. And then one day, someone shows up with a suitcase for money. Or perhaps a big check. I've got this donation to your ministry with all these zeros on it. This is where you're being led into temptation. That person is going to say, oh, man, I've heard your ministry. You're doing great work. I really want to support it. I got this big check with all these zeros on it. Or I've got this suitcase full of cash. I think the suitcase full of cash probably happens a whole lot more than a check with lots of zeros. I've got this suitcase, several of them, in fact. Open them up, all them bills stacked in there. We can move you on to a bigger building. How would you like to be a TV preacher? Just think of all the people you can reach for Jesus with this money, with your TV studio, with your ever-expanding super church. Just think, you'll be on TV. Hell, you'll be like a rock star up there. Just think of all the people you're going to, and that's where people start justifying themselves. You know, people fall for scams. You know, like the old saying, if it's too good to be true, there's a catch. It is. You know, it is too good to be true. Exactly. People start justifying. Man, I could reach all sorts of people for Jesus. But what your real motivation is, I can have a nice car. I'll be like a rock star. I'll be a celebrity. Everybody know who I am. But you justify it. You always know you're getting let off somewhere you ought not to be, because when you start having to invent justifications, if it's A-okay, you wouldn't have to have a justification. Be like, this is the way to go. But see, you got to invent these justifications. Man, just imagine the people I can reach. I'm going to be able to reach so many more people with the TV. I can reach people worldwide with TV. Well, you can also do that with a podcast you record in your bedroom too. You know, the reality is you're looking at that money and all it can buy and the celebrity status and being somebody important. Hell, you might get invited to the White House. You're so damn important. That's what you're looking at. Because at the end of the day, if a man shows up with suitcases full of bills, you know, in your heart of hearts, you know he's buying something with that. He isn't just, I really like what you're doing. Just keep doing what you're doing. I'm not going to interfere. And he's not like he's going to threaten to interfere. Because, you see, the threat is insinuated. You see, they hand you that first suitcase full of bills. And you're like, it's like drugs. You know, like back when the crack thing was real big back in the day. You know, the crack dealers would give away that first hit of crack for free. You want crack rock? I'll give you crack rock, kid. Get after it. Because they know you'd be hooked after that first one. You see, they hand you that first suitcase full of money and say, just keep on doing, man. Just keep doing your ministry. And you got that money now, this guy ain't even coming at me talking about, be sure you don't talk about certain things. Everything's cool. But see, every suitcase after that, see, now they got you hooked. Every suitcase after that, it's insinuated. When you're on third or fourth suitcase, a regular coming of suitcases, you understand. It's insinuated. There's certain things you're not going to talk about. Maybe you're sitting there and that first time you'd realize you're sitting there writing out a sermon or, you know, you making notes, because I imagine professional preachers probably actually do that, unlike me who just sits here and talks. You get their notes and you're practicing. And when you hit a certain part or a certain passage of scripture and you stop and you say, I better not say that. Because of your justifications, you're not going to admit why you shouldn't, quote unquote, probably shouldn't say that. But in your heart of hearts, you know why you shouldn't say that. Because if you do, those suitcases full of money might stop coming. You see, you've been bought. You made all these justifications, but you've been bought. A listener emailed me just the other day. And you know, just let me know they enjoy the show. And I replied, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I replied along lines of, you know, it's amazing. The more you study, the more you seek the Lord, the more you read your Bible and you do all these things together, the more you realize what's written, how all of it ties together. You sit there and talk about something. And it's like, you know, well, that's just like this other part where it's written. It is written, a man cannot serve two masters. Think about that. Elsewhere is written, a man cannot serve two masters. You cannot have two employers. Now imagine, and going all the way back to where we started with this, imagine the shepherd shows up, the sheep have wandered off, the hired men are standing around staring at their phones or whatever, and the shepherd's like, where are the sheep? They wandered off. But you see, the hired men, they actually were taking payment from the sheep rustlers. You see, they were taking money from the shepherd. They took on employment from the shepherd, but then they wound up also taking bribes, taking money from the sheep rustlers. So the sheep would wander off, so they'd get rustled. I don't know who'd want to rustle a sheep, but we're going to use that. Biblical times, they would probably rustle a sheep. But imagine you were working. I'm trying to think of another illustration. You know, imagine you're working, I don't know, at a record company. Say you're working at a recording studio. And you keep working there, but yet you're also taking a check from the competition recording studio. And then the person that owns that studio is like, man, why is this guy's production quality gone in the toilet? Our competition down the street is blowing our doors off because their production quality is much better. This guy's, he used to be good. He's falling off the job. Why? Well, because he's taking a check from two people. You see, you can't take a check. It's written, man cannot serve two masters. You can't take a check from two different people. You can't be employed by two different people. Somebody coming up and offering to pay the hired man. Well, they're not paying them to do the work that their original employer, the shepherd, is paying them for. They're obviously paying because they're already getting paid for that. So they're getting paid to do something else, aren't they? Here's the rub, isn't it? Your reasoning, you know, can be evidence enough for you. When you see some guy standing up there, and you know this guy lives in opulent wealth, and he's standing up there telling his people, God blesses those who bless Israel. You need to contact your representative and tell them to send more money and bombs to Israel because God is going to bless us. He'll save America if we bless Israel. Saw something here a while back. Somebody was saying, I don't even remember where I saw it. And they were like, the only reason America's not worse than it is today is because of America's support for Israel. I don't have to have a paper trail. I don't. To make my own judgments. To make my own decisions and my own judgments on somebody. I don't have to have a paper trail. I don't have to have an accountant go in and audit this guy's books. I know he's getting paid. You know, I know he's getting paid. He's not doing the shepherd's work. He's doing the work of whoever's buying all this opulent wealth for him. I'm sorry, it just is. I don't have to have evidence of that. My reasoning tells me. Now, it's not like I have the ability to like drag this guy before a court and make accusations. I'm saying judgments for my own personal self. I'm not going to listen to somebody like that. Because you see, they got led into temptation. I praise God. I really do. I am so, one thing I'm grateful to God, of course, obviously for a lot of things. And one thing is I'm very grateful for is that any time when I've been weak, that nobody's ever showed up with a suitcase full of cash. You know, I wish I could sit here and boast and brag about what a strong, upright person, and I would never fall for that. Look, I come as the weakest of men. I am grateful that in times past, especially when I was in maybe a more weaker state, nobody has ever showed up with a suitcase full of cash to say, you know, you're doing a good job. I just want, you know, I'm glad that never happened. And that comes down to, Lord, lead us not into temptation. Lord, don't let that guy ever show up with a suitcase full of cash because I'm weak and I might take it. That's why Jesus said that. Don't lead us into temptation. Don't even let him show up. So I don't have to deal with that. Now, I just remembered, I referenced the vow of poverty earlier. And I said I was going to get back and kind of explain that, why I don't necessarily agree with that. You shouldn't have to be forced to take a vow of poverty. You know, if you're having to kind of basically be goaded into it, then you're not in the right place. Does that make sense? It's kind of like the difference between trying to find God by following all of the rules of the law instead of finding Jesus, so that you just want to do those things that are covered under the law. And it's not so much work that way. The laws are written on your heart. You know, you shouldn't be, if you happen to be forced, poked and prodded to take a quote unquote vow of poverty, that's to miss the point. You see, you want to be in a place in your heart to where all that money, wealth, celebrity, whatever it is that they can offer that so many of these men have taken. You can observe they've taken that deal. You won't get to a part where you don't actually even care about that. When you reflect on yourself to make sure you're coming from the right place, you can look at yourself, self-examine, and say, no, I'm not jealous. I don't care anything about that. In fact, I wouldn't even want to mess with all of that. You don't need a vow of poverty. Your goal is to be in a place where you're happy with where you're at. You understand that you're on the road of truth. Jesus never walked around living in opulent wealth. And his servants, you know, were not either. This applies to any of you. Lord is God. You're where you're at now. You know, walk with the Lord where you're at right now. And for goodness sakes, don't look at these people who the world presents to you as successful. Someone to be admired. They're a celebrity. Don't look at these people with envy. Don't look at the people in your town that have more money than you. Don't look at them with envy. Because a lot of times, all that money, wealth, what the world calls success, it always comes at a price. Usually there's a connection of being led into temptation. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know, I'm afraid it kind of got a little convoluted there at the end. I apologize for that. It's kind of running out of steam, I guess. You know, but overall, I hope you got something that happens. Like I said, I don't have a fancy notes here where I'm just going off of a script. I hope you got something out of it. I really appreciate all of you joining me here every week. Thank you very much. And I always, as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.